Hi everyone, welcome to another exciting episode of Lambda Test XP Series. Through XP Series, we dive into a world of innovations and insights featuring renowned industry experts and business leaders in the testing and QA ecosystem. I'm your host, Kavya, Director of Product Marketing at Lambda Test, and it's an absolute pleasure to have you all with us today. Today's webinar explores the fascinating journey of AI-powered test automation with our guest on the show, Manish Jha, Senior Director, Product Head at Avo Automation. Manish is a seasoned product leader known for crafting innovative solutions across diverse industries. He brings a wealth of experience in product road mapping and strategic partnerships, and his customer-centric approach and expertise in agile methodologies have consistently delivered exceptional results at Avo Automation. Avo Automation is an AI-driven, no-code, end-to-end test automation platform that enables continuous quality assurance. Its solutions such as test data management and machine learning capabilities help teams improve the quality, reliability, and of course, the speed of their software development process. It's a privilege to have you join us today. Welcome to the show, Manish.
Thank you, Kavya, so much.
Great. So why don't you tell our audience more about yourself and your journey?
Sure. I mean, you've already touched base, but quickly in the interest of the audience. I've been into product management primarily when I started my career, though that was not the title back then. When I'm saying back then, I'm talking really little, down the calendar memories around early 2000s. But my interest has been around product design, product management, crafting out, what should be the solutioning around the product, even though when I was not directly linked or designated product management guy. My sort of expertise comes from the recent one was before Avo into automotive, where I was working with world's largest dealer management provider. And then, of course, it varies then from, input AI ML space. I started my career in gaming, which is quite different in India, but yeah, that's how I started. And then I moved on to different roles, of course, worn different hats. Key areas, if you say, like you rightly said, product road mapping, product pricing, strategizing, keeping an eye on the trends and the competition, and of course, understanding how we still relevant and sort of course correcting every now and then with the roadmap. I think that's my key area and I love to be at. And as a head of product at Avo Automation, that's some of the things that I definitely take care of course, extended function of product marketing and support.
Very interesting to hear that. That is definitely diverse from gaming to software testing or QE space, right? That is quite a journey. Thank you so much for sharing that, Manish. So I was recently reading about, the origins of AI and came across an interesting example, by the way. It is said that it was found in Greek mythology. Hephaestus, the god of craftsmanship, apparently had developed mechanical attendants who were, who could basically think they were capable of independent thought. Yeah. I'm not sure how much, of a truth lies in that, but that's it was very interesting. And reading about that and all the way to the latest advancements that we see, right? AI's journey has definitely been very fascinating for all of us. And especially working in the QE and testing space, the future of testing through implementation of AI is something that we've been talking about and reading about, on a daily basis now. And today we are here to talk about Avo Automation's adventure through AI-powered test automation. So Manish, would definitely love to start with your thoughts on it.
Sure. So I'll give you some references on how Avo internally we are strategizing and leveraging AI or Gen AI, which is a new buzzword these days, of course. And some of the things which is in flight, where we are sort of positioning ourselves in coming next 6-12 months. And what will make it different, of course. But if I have to sort of talk about it, it's a couple of multifaceted area, right? When we talk AI, there's so many flavors to it. So you still have to extract what is relevant for you, especially in the test automation world, right? So I'll keep it a little bit precise to the boundary of test automation. And the way I look at it is that definitely there is a first bucket, which I put it is your the test data side of things. When we talk about test automation, I personally feel that test data cannot be not regarded. It's a very tight coupled another subdomain, which has to be sort of take it along with the journey of your testing cycle. So that's an area. And I see definitely that there is a quite diverse and realistic test data sets that is being also developed in the market. I see a couple of providers, I see that. And internally, we are also leveraging that so that when you're actually testing your software or your application under test, you know, your tool might do a job of automating it, but what you're feeding in and what you're getting out of it also matters, right? And that's when you are actually calling it a QA certified or QC certified product or a build. So having said that, I think it's very, very important that, you know, we also are looking in AVO, creating those pre-built data sets. Now, whether it is for enterprise applications like SAP and Oracle, or is it about a simple, let's say, a banking application, and you want to test, for example, you know, let's say 500,000 credit cards that is being used by that particular bank, for example, right? So how do you test that? So I think having that is an area definitely where we are using GenAI in producing those synthetic data, and it is helping our testers a lot. It also reduces a lot of manual effort, right? Because you are now sort of covering an end-to-end spectrum and giving a realistic a breakdown of whether your system would be able to handle it or not. So that's one. The second area, though many people would have already heard about it, some companies are already adventuring on it, but there is still, when we talk about automation in industry, I say a lot of manual works are still being done. And when I say manual, I'm talking about a stage before the testing, right? So what happens before the testing? So, you know, a customer might have given a company a dump of some requirements, or your business analyst would have gone on site and taken a dump of, let's say, these are the customer ask. Or, for example, it's a product-based company also, this is where we will innovate. So there would be certain, you know, an SRS document or an EPIC, in any format, basically a requirement. Now, writing that requirement, and then from that onward, the cycle of explaining that back to the team of engineering and manual tester, and then saying, hey, this is what it looks like, a feature X, right? Or this is the product Y that you need to develop. Did you understand that? And then from that, the testing team would also sort of start adopting that and then write some manual test cases. So you see, this is a lot of manual work. First is the understanding part of it, which is a manual rational thinking. And second is, of course, translating to what an X person has thought about as a figure of a product feature. It needs to translate well. So that's where we are leveraging GenAI, because we feel that you can actually leverage and actually, you know, be more productive in utilizations of your resources and teams bandwidth in a better area. You know, there's no brainer in this if you can actually leverage some of the existing technology. And that's what AVO is actually also doing in terms of, you know, from requirement to converting into manual test cases. And then from manual test cases, the phase two of what we are doing is also creating an automation script, which is AVO compatible script. So you basically get an end-to-end spectrum of automating from requirement till, you know, automation. Some of the adventures.
Thank you so much for summing that up. It is definitely the TLDR, you know, for me. So very interesting to learn about this. And from there on, I just want to jump onto the very first question. How do you address the challenges of ensuring the reliability and accuracy of AI models used in test automation, right? Especially when it comes to a dynamic and evolving software environment, because definitely it's changing, right? As we speak, it's changing.
Absolutely. And that's a great question, and a great first question, I would say, with the first one, because now this would have actually created some, you know, curiosity with the audiences around, okay, you're using it, but you must be also facing some challenges, right? So again, if you see this, it's a multifaceted approach in how we are basically dealing with this, right? The strategies that we are following internally on how to get relevant and being relevant in what you're practicing. Number one, I would sort of put it is, you know, we constantly monitor and validate. So, you know, you might use existing some of the LLM models or certain pre-data sets, but evaluating that those models in your testing environment, that is one variable, right? Because they have been tested in maybe in some other situations and some other use cases. So how do you plug that up and then sort of marry that with your own use case is number one. And then we see whether the results that you're expecting is actually coming out or not. Then secondly, what we are also doing is that we are playing around with the accuracy and the effectiveness of it. And we are trying to gauge that. It might spit out some results, but was it 50%? Was it 40%? Where exactly it is? That is something is an area that we are definitely constantly analyzing. So I think with that, what happens is that it feeds back and trains back the system, whether it is, if it is not something that we are expecting, or let's say if it is something already what we're looking at, right? So I think that is a very one important area for any company, for any organization, I think, or practitioners, that they should be doing it, which is what we are also doing it. Second, I think, area I would probably put it is maybe the dynamic way of how you train your model. I think it's important because, again, if I come back to the same example, that would have been developed in a certain situations or keeping some references in mind, right? Whether you're taking any LLM model, for example, Entropy, Cohere, whatever is your use case. When you take it to your actual playground and you know, your applications, what you're talking about, your application is continuously evolving, right? So whatever it was in current sprint today, for example, and how you're positioning your product 6 months down the line, it might look very different, right? Today, you might have maybe, you know, from A to B, but your roadmap says that you have to go from A to, let's say, Z. So that means your product has to evolve. That means it will have furthermore bolt-ons and furthermore pillars on top of it. And then it might shape up something different, right? And I think keeping that in mind and then sort of training back your, again, how your software is evolving, I think it's a very important and a continuous learning aspect that has to be done. And your training has to be also back to the system, quite adaptive that way, right? So I think that's very important in terms of being relevant and effective in what you're expecting and keeping it constant, you know, in tandem with your product development. That was my point. I think when it also comes and I talk about feedback, one is the product part of it. I think the third part is also around the humans, right? So your testers who are testing it, your developers, and I think they are your right stakeholders also, end of the day, your product managers. So I think, you know, when they see that, I think they are also a qualified, you know, a stakeholder in saying whether this was the right data, wrong data, the output was actually doing the job or not. And I think keeping those also in, as an input mechanism and training it back, I think sort of adds a little human touch to it, right? It can't be just the output and then you are feeding it back with certain numbers and metrics and saying, train it again and then give me another feedback. So I think that's another area, and that's what we keep doing week on week. We sync up with engineering, customer success, customer product team, and say that, you know, what this is what we've got. Do you think this is relevant, right? And I think very important part, and this is something that has generally come up with most of my conversation with even analysts as well, you know, like so Gartner or Forrester, where you have to keep your, you know, human in loop logic. You can't sort of bypass thinking that these are smart systems or they will do my job. I think that if we do, I think it's quite scary because you don't know how it might end up, right? So I think keeping in, you know, in human in loop, I think is very, very important part. So, you know, you need somebody to approve that in order to sort of go to the next level. So I think that's where, you know, I would keep, and that's what how we train our own internal engineering processes of using these technologies and keep evolving from that. I hope I sort of painted the picture, what methodologies and everything that we're doing internally.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I think you nailed it. Thank you so much for the insights, Manish. What stood out for me is, you know, how everyone's debating about humans and AI coexisting. And, you know, you rightfully said that humans have to be in loop. And even when you were explaining the points, right, I could sort of imagine how it's a collaborative effort between various teams that is sort of leading up to, constant iteration going on, this constant collaboration. There are multiple layers of evolution that's happening. And on the top of all of this, of course, there is this existence of AI and human validation that's sort of required for sure. Right. So super interesting to hear that. And that brings me to the next question. You know, can you please elaborate on the integration of AI-driven test automation with continuous integration and continuous development pipelines, basically CI/CD pipelines, and how this integration sort of impacts the development workflow?
Sure. So, I mean, it's a no-brainer that enterprises who are trying to go into this area, they are following or trying to adopt CI/CD. One area where I generally sort of also add to this terminology is CD. It's actually CI/CD and CD because your integration is done, development, deployment is done, but testing, what about that? And this is what Evo or players like us actually do, right? So certainly, and I think one area, you know, where I think that Evo plays a major role in having CI/CD integrated is basically around, you know, so when you think about that, and I'll take a step back, right? There's a pipeline and there are codes that is being merged to it, right? So one particular example definitely is that, you know, the moment it gets merged, whether it's a branch level code or main level code, your test automation script, which are linked to it, should be triggered, right? So I think that's definitely very, very important from a CT perspective, because you don't want to sort of go to the old school practices of building it up, packaging up your build again and giving to the testing team. They will take another 1 week, 10 days, and then again come back with the feedback, right? The way you have 14 days, by the way, of the agile development. A typical sprint runs for 14 days. In that, actual productive days, there are actually 10. So, you know, in that only you have to develop, test everything, and then release your product. So that luxury is gone any which way. Now, coming to the reality where in that short span, you have to do all of it, you can't have manual intervention needed at that time. So that's hence this infrastructure, first of all, is very important. And secondly, I believe that, you know, the kind of test that is being run, whether it's integration, regression, any type of automation test, these have to be triggered immediately. So that point number two that I would like to associate it with this is basically the feedback part of it, right? So you want your developers, the moment they have entered certain code, immediately they should understand whether it ran well, whether it was expected or not, whether the acceptance criteria for that feature was this, and then did it expectedly behave in the same way or not. I think it's very important. One, it saves time. Second, it of course gives you instant, sort of report card, whether how your build is shaping up, right? And as early you do it, I mean, it's not a news for anybody, but early detection of bugs or issues in the system helps you downstream activity in saving a lot of millions of dollars, honestly, right? So I think that is definitely an area, in terms of faster feedback loops, if I say. The third, I think what we have also seen is in terms of the test coverage. Now, test coverage as a word can be a little misleading. I mean, it's my personal opinion to it, because, you know, your coverage, whether you had got, let's say, 400 or 500 test cases and you executed it and you say, hey, yeah, I've done it. These are the pass-fail scenarios and we have covered it, right? My honest opinion to this is that actually there should be right element of risk-based test coverage, meaning if something has been developed newly or changed, let's say, in an existing world, and then that was, let's say, corresponding to one or two test cases, which was not, let's say, covered in your regression or anywhere else, then irrespective of 500 or 400 test cases that you have tested, if those two were not, you are at very high risk. So your coverage number does not give you any real picture about it, right? So I think those are the areas where AI model and then infusing CI/CD, if you see, can give you a very clarity in terms of, okay, what should I have been actually focusing on? Actually, I was wasting time in probably regressing these 500, which was not even needed because those not affected in this release. I should have focused on these things. So I think that smart system of diverting attention to what is important versus what's okay to ignore, I think that is something which is also in Evo we are trying to solve, right? It goes without saying again that it helps in your resource utilizations, your bandwidth, and you can use those times in a better way and more productive way, right? In the things where we are also seeing in future, where it's in flight for us, of course, very early days, but how do we make it a predictive maintenance? This is a new terminology we are trying to coin in the market. But see, you've got historical data, right? You've got all your input from the pipelines. You have seen all the raw data of pass-fail scenarios, a lot of other metadata also. If you marry all these information, how about sort of working on that, okay, this is where the most potential failures are going to happen, you know, at the time of insertion of those codes itself. I think that level, if we switch our gear to that, I think a lot can be furthermore expedited in terms of the product development and furthermore, visibility to the early issues that can actually be sort of traced and spotlighted, right? And end of the day, of course, hence, you know, it's a part of entirely streamlining the testing processes. you know, from an enterprise perspective, what are the main goals? The main goals are, how do I go to market very quickly? How my standards are very high in terms of quality. Hope my customers are not finding it, you know, quite glitchy or buggy built. And end of the day, my NPS or whatever score they're following should be good. So I think that's where, with the motive of keeping the enterprise's goals in mind and how these doesn't do come in the foreground, because this is not, these are not the products which are customer facing, right? But these are the pillars on how you achieve those goals. So we are the enablers, I would say. We are on that post, helping enterprises to build their quality software. And that's the methodologies that we're following.
That's quite insightful. Again, thank you for sharing. I mean, of course, for enterprises, faster time to market is definitely the key when it comes to, you know, enhanced development workflows and all of that, right? And interesting to hear about how I was ensuring AI has been seamlessly blending into CI, not just CI/CD, but also, you know, the continuous testing execution part of it. And the end goal for all of us is to make the lives of testers and developers easier. As I said, good to see that I was evolving to keep pace with all the rapid changes that are happening in the testing and development space. And talking about enterprises, you know, that also brings me to the next question. Can you share some insights, specific examples from Avvo's product development journey where AI-driven test automation has led to significant benefits of enterprises?
Sure. So one of the Gen AI feature that we launched, though we're calling it still in beta right now, and it will be productized next month in the full general release. When we were doing this, so that feature, by the way, Gen AI is all about your from requirement to your test case creation. And we evaluated, the traditional process of when you see a requirement, what is the process of, first of all, capturing that requirement? Then, of course, how much time does it take in the KTs or handover processes? Then there's a reverse KT sometimes where people understand, hey, this is what I've understood. Is it right? And then they go about writing their test cases and all that, right? When we replace that with Avvo, we really have found out that you can slash your overall time taken in that quadrant itself of the manual work by 50%. Okay. Now, yes, there is a caveat. People might argue saying that, you know, you are depending upon a machine's output of generating test cases. So what if I added a junk data in terms of input and then you're getting a junk output, right? But then again, it can be also debated in the sense of the intelligence of somebody who's doing it manually also, right? How much have they understood? What is their interpretation of a feature? So it's quite open-ended. But coming back to the point, there is a review cycle, of course, right? You will have certain syntaxes, the way documents are done. You will have certain acceptance criteria, high level. You will tell this is the API requirement or this is a middleware requirement or a DB or a front end, right? So, and we don't need much meat in it, honestly. We just understand the skeleton of, if you have given these things, you know, it's in plain Jane English, that's it. There's no complexity of, oh, you need to write it in Jerkin language or some other syntaxes and then only we understand. You write like a novel and we will understand the requirements and we'll probably convert that into manual tests. So that's one area. That's where we have seen significant reduction, and we have seen now teams been utilized in better areas, for example, data interpretations and then BI side of things that, you know, how was the result? They can actually analyze executions of last six results and be more proactive that where the things should be fixed, right? And then have further downstream activities between engineering and QA conversations. So that's one. The second area that we have also seen is basically, in the sense of smart regression. Now, and this is another term when I told you in my previous point that if I tell you that out of 100, you just have to focus on this 5, that means what I'm telling you is that, you know, just defocus from this, what you've been doing regularly, but focus on only these 5 so that you're able to achieve the same result with less risk covered and your coverage is still high. So with that, what I have seen is, and when you actually execute that, so there are two actually play of the features here. One is, of course, when you run things in parallel, it definitely distributes the load and then goes about it. And you know that Lambda is pioneer in that, so we'll not talk on that much. But consider that feature and then telling what to test, I think combined is a very powerful value proposition. And we have seen that, you know, the results are coming more faster than they anticipate. So if 500 test cases were taking 6 hours for you to sort of get the results and know the blueprint of what your status is for an application health status. Now you are doing only 100. That means you are actually telling them much in advance with better content in it and focused report of, you know, what things have done. So that way, team have been more proactive in fixing things, in understanding the cracks and the other areas where things have not went well. And then, you know, again, this has helped enterprises in focusing, okay, should we think about enhancing this feature or should we really think of maintaining this feature better and keeping it more robust so that then we move to the next level? So these are some of the downstream benefits that organizations have actually benefited out of it, right?
No, thank you. I mean, that's a very compelling pitch as well, because, you know, essentially you are freeing up the testers to help them focus on what's sort of important, right? And yeah, very curious to try my hands on what you mentioned about the test generation part of it. I mean, you know, execution part of it too. And yeah, interesting to hear about the smart regression features as well. Yeah, thanks for shedding light on Avo's product journey and, you know, mentioning how AI is essentially reducing the manual effort while also boosting the test execution part of it. Great. So that also brings up to the next question. You did mention about, you know, the collaboration between Avo and Lambda Test. So, you know, how does the partnership between Avo Automation and Lambda Test enhance the test capabilities, testing capabilities for organizations? And what specific benefits can users expect from this collaboration?
Sure. Again, my unbiased view to this is very clear. Things that are there in the market through certain partners, I don't believe in redoing it or re-engineering it at your end. If there are champions in certain areas, for example, Lambda, you have got Hyper Execute and many similar and a lot of different other visual testing capabilities, etc., etc. So, you know, if I'm partnering with Lambda, right, why would I do this internally? Even though we had it before your partnership, so, you know, we had parallel execution and all that, but that's for a separate use case, which is more complicated tech stack where it was required. But coming to your point, see, end of the day, if I take seed from an enterprise level, quality is paramount. There's just no negotiation about it, right? When a product has to be, say, certified by QA and QC groups, right, it is almost expected that there should be no issue in the product. But as we evolve, right, in the methodologies of how product is being developed, you know, we're talking about scaled agile, we're talking about agile and so many Kanban, blah, 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 right? And club it with the actual moving parts of the system of an enterprise. And when I say moving part, I am saying, think about a large enterprise where they have got several components of front-end applications, back-end applications, API layers in between, you know, the database part of it and cloud part of it. Some of them are, on-prem, some they are trying to migrate. It's a very messy world. It's not that straightforward, right? And you are telling somebody to test that system end-to-end and still asking them, hey, do you have confidence to say this will be bug-free, right? So point that I'm trying to make here is that, you know, even though, you know, things are there out there complicated, I think partners like, you know, a test automation platform like us, you know, platforms like yours, Kavya, Lambda Test, I think brings up that, you know, bridges that gap basically, where if you have those different permutation and combination, I'll bring that use case also, what I'm referring to, but then it becomes like a one-stop solution, isn't it? Like, okay, I did my job here in Avo Automation for automation purposes, but okay, I need the scripts to run in multiple browsers or multiple OSs. Now, how do I do that? If I start creating a device lab, I don't know when will Avo, you know, establish the business on that, even if they're interested or not. But I see Lambda doing that quite well. I rather partner with them and help my customer do that. And the model in which we are working, you know, all SaaS-based, use as much as you want to, I think it sort of also breaks the barrier of you're not confined, right? And that's my next point. Like, imagine if you have a customer, Kavya, that is a Lambda customer, but they wanted to move to Avo for some XYZ reason, and they've been using some other tool. If they see that we are already partnered with you, how seamless for them it would be to partner, saying that, oh, they already have Lambda as a execution platform, let's say channel partner. I don't have to find out or worry about my, do I have to change this setup? What do I do? Or will Evo be able to do that or not with Lambda? So from a customer lens also, it sort of helps a lot in that one seamless journey. That's what I see. And honestly, without even shying away, I think the cost part of it, the effectiveness of scalability and all that, which, you know, how do you scale your in-house testing to at that environment? I think that USP is something definitely definitely to be tabled around. And that's what I think brings the unique value proposition when I talk about Evo and Lambda as a joint value prop.
No, thank you so much, Manish. That really helps. And just to add, we are excited about how the partnership is sort of shaping up. The end goal for all of us at the end of the day is to elevate testing together, right? As you said, we want to ensure that customers are having a seamless experience. And I think our joint value prop sort of underscores the commitment that we are making towards testing when it comes to innovation, or building that comprehensive solutions for the customers at the end of the day, right?
Absolutely.
Great. And moving on, you know, to the future, as we look into the future, what are some emerging trends and technologies in AI-powered test automation that we should be excited about?
So one thing, I mean, I'm sure, you know, I might want to broadcast this news via this channel, but, you know, we were featured in Gartner, you know, market guide recently that got published 2 weeks ago. And it's a very interesting, you know, document if you read about that, Kavya, in general, also to be aware about how the trends and the this industry is evolving. So there are certain bites from that, which I'll definitely bring out, and some of my own opinion and what I do, my own research. One area that I've been seeing, and like I said in my previous point, this is a very complicated ecosystem of businesses, right? Where enterprises are dealing with multiple apps, multiple technologies. Some are in the old stack, some trying to modernize, some are moving from this to that, etc., etc. In this entire, the tug of war about what should be the right technology set, etc., etc., we forget that there is a business element of this in the entire ecosystem. Who are the ones who are driving this thing? Like when I say thing, whether it's revenue, whether it's sales, or actually practitioners also, as you see, the demand that we are seeing these days is that can Evo actually support, you know, business analyst type of personas? Can they automate, you know? And these are some of the new trends that we've been hearing, right? When I bring in that element about a manual tester able to automate that, or a product manager or a business analyst able to come to Evo and automate that, that means that howsoever complicated background algorithm we have, you have to simplify that from a front-end perspective. Otherwise, you still are saying you are a no-code, low-code, whatever platform, but your approach towards automation is still quite messy or complicated. It requires skill set, right? And when I say that, then what is the point of us evolving from Selenium era of days to a no-code era of day when the time or amount in understanding how to automate is taking the same time, or the learning curve for the user is same time, right? So where I'm stressing the point that I'm coming to is that we have to keep that end user or that business user, you know, hat always in mind on how do you project anything on the UI, right? So with that, the first thing that I'm trying to come up is, I'm trying to make point is, I think the way test cases have been authored, there are multiple companies doing in multiple formats, and they're quite innovative in their own sense. But I do see a trend in the NLP based of authoring would be one area which would pick up more. And the reason I'm saying is that because it involves zero skills, it requires, when I say zero, I'm saying near to zero. Then secondly, it does not require, of course, any programming language. And how you write your own, let's say an essay in English, is how you would be basically writing your automation. So I think that is definitely going to pick up. And I see that with an agile team where everybody wants to contribute to QA, it's not just one person's job, right? So for example, if your designers are evaluating certain things, or say your manual test cases are writing in manual way or whichever format, you can still tell your business users that go ahead, draw in this canvas and see that can you automate a simple thing in English, and why not? Similarly, I think The other aspect, and this level where I'm talking about contribution is a little technical, but your testing systems, self-learning testing systems, I think system has to automatically understand and detect where the failures have happened, analyze these results always as and when the results have been churned out, and it should be intelligent enough to at least pinpoint what was the root cause of those failures. I think a lot of this thing is happening manual, or you are exporting that data to a BI tool and trying to make a sense out of it. But within the test automation tool itself, if you're able to provide that, I think, you know, your and that's where, again, the interpretation of data can be looked from a project manager perspective, you know, your business owners, and, you know, and many people can contribute that way. So I think that part is very important. And that sort of extends toward, of course, self-healing and a lot of other, which I will not touch base because it's a quite already a common topic, but goes without saying that you need to think about those areas also where AI would be furthermore getting strengthened or evolved, right? The second last point I would like to talk about, predictive analytics. I spoke about that a little bit, but let me give you a little more background to that. So when I say predictive analytics, it's not just telling or pointing teams or enterprises in the right direction that this is what has happened. How do you evolve to that? Because you are actually commanding a statement to a, you know, business owner or somebody that you go and find out fault there, right? Now, that is a quite, I would say, a bold statement to say, unless you're not very confident. Whether it's a manual work, if somebody asked me that, you know, are you very confident that there would be a guard at the main gate of my office? I'm not sure if he's out there for a tea break or gone for a smoke or I don't know, right? So the point is, that and how do you mature that model, right? So it needs to sort of feeds onto a lot of data. For example, your support data, right? How many tickets have been raised in last 6 months? It also talks about your change request. That means your requirement that you went through was not probably accepted the way it was. And then it underwent a lot of cycle. And then today, you know, X days afterwards, that launch of the feature, it's changed to something else. Then again, your observability related information, right? You monitor your application. So where did the spike up of DB happen, CPU usages, all that? Imagine there are so many rich data. It's like all gold mine. And when you club that and then tell them, marrying all these data points into a certain data lake, and then tell them, we have found in last 6 months when this has happened, then this is where your utilization has happened. This is where your API layer basically got cracked. Hence, you have 100 odd bugs in the middleware and not on the front end. Now, this is where they would be very interested to know, where currently most of the players are talking about your test cases fast, fail, you know, how many test suites were okay to approve and not approve. I think this is where the focus would be going, of course. And the reason I'm sharing, it's not secret anyway, many people are talking about it. And I really believe towards the end, how I'd like to conclude this point is that, you know, earlier it was a lot of manual work. Then we are talking about automation, right? Probably keeping human in loop and all of that. But eventually, we don't know, 5 years, 10 years down the line, a lot of this will be autonomous also, right? You are just informed, maybe keeping in loop, but you don't have to action upon. So that's how I see the trend changing, you know, from manual to automation to autonomous, and a maturity of the backend of this entire pillars would be how you mature your models and AI models and all of that.
I was absolutely captivated by all the various points that you had to share. Very insightful perspectives, Manish. You know, interestingly, I also had a discussion recently with Nitin. You know, we spoke about user experience testing, wherein he spoke about how different teams are involved in creating the user experience framework itself, right? So your points about how different team members, be a designer or a business analyst, for instance, right? How they have to, at the end of the day, they all have to sort of test it out, you know. And you know, when you were talking about it, that's exactly what it made me recall. It's about how you know, you can make testing more accessible for various teams. And the second thing that sort of stood out for me was, of course, the predictive analysis part, you know, forecasting the future outcomes. That is essentially going to really help not just users, but from a scale perspective, even the enterprises.
Because everybody's trying to save money, right? End of the day, right? Absolutely. So if your tool is not helping them save money because they are paying already a licensing cost to you, and we're not helping them save in any other dimension, then it adds up to your cost end of the day, right? Then yeah. What is the ROI that they should be thinking from our side, right? What is the TCO? Yeah. So yeah.
No, absolutely. The as you said, the future of AI powered testing definitely sounds promising. You know, scalability, reliability, and of course, the cost effectiveness of it all. These would be, I think, the three pillars for us to ensure we are providing to the customers at the end of the day. And coming to the very last question of the day, what advice would you give to software development teams that are aiming to leverage AI to enhance their test automation strategies?
Sure. If I'm qualified to give advice, I would definitely give. Again, these are some of the self-learnings, Kavya, where I see how we have matured or what precautions or areas that we focused on has yield us some results, right? So I'm going to talk about more about the approach part of things to sum up with the advice and, that people can make sense out of it already, right? So how we started off when, there was a buzzword about AI, Gen AI, and customers asking, do you have anything to show in your product, right? So yes, we jumped onto this bandwagon of, AI, Gen AI, because of the pressure of the market and the customer that we have to show something. But that aside, of course, we had a strategic planning about your monitoring roadmaps and other areas that how we should be doing things more smartly. That was the idea. Now, whether AI comes into picture to do certain things or it's a different aspect of AI, whether machine learning, et cetera, that's a technical discussion to have. But we definitely had very clear goal in mind. Number one, I would say you should definitely have a very clear goal in mind because, see, there's a X thing that an organization wants to achieve, right? An organization has a lot of issues, right? You can't solve all of that. So you have to think about that, what is the most problematic area that you would pick? Keeping that goal in mind is if you start off your journey, I think it would sort of cull all the noises that you will keep hearing during the course of that journey of how you develop or go about that idea. That's number one. I think second, I would say is in that journey, find out the right spots. Okay. Now, we go on a road trip, for example, right? There are multiple routes in which you can go, but you choose the most optimized, shortest, where probably you have, most of the dhabas and etc. Personal choices, of course, but it crafts you a tailored road for you that this is what you will choose. Similarly, on any journey from an enterprise perspective, if your one of the spots is that we are spending a lot on manual work, okay, we are doing a lot of repetitive work, right? Pick that out on that goal. So now, for example, from the first point when I said you have to have a clear goal, I will probably pick, I want to have my risk coverage 100% after 6 months. Now from that, my point number two about right spots, finding out the right spot, I would do, okay, I will cull all those manual works in order to achieve that, right? That's naked. Third, I would say is that I think these are quite overwhelming technologies also. So I think having a very deep understanding is also very important. You can't go away with having a YouTube video that you have seen or if you have done some webinars or sessions and then you think you are expert of it. I think a deep understanding of these technologies like machine learning, natural language processing, computer vision is very important. I mean, whatever is relevant in the goal that you're trying to solve, you identify what technologies, and I think that is very important. And more also, applied knowledge I'm talking about, not the other way around, right? So that is one area I would say, so that only then you can champion, because unless you don't put your hands in the mud, right, you don't know what's inside. So that's one. I think one more point which I can probably add is that, you should be experimenting and iterating a lot. It is a standard practice of any POC, how do you approach, or any new product development also that you do. But it also fits into this context because, like I said, your product is changing, your data is changing, your environment is changing, how you started your AI journey or, these technology adoption in certain, day one of the month versus day 30th, things are changing rapidly overnight. So I think iterating that and feeding back into the system, it goes to my earlier points also. I think it is very important so that you are relevant with what you are starting off your project with. And on the middle of that also, you're still relevant. So I think that's important. And again, like I said, monitoring and adapting is another area which should be looked at definitely. What are your key metrics? Is it really making some sense? So while I'm doing all the checklist things, I'm doing this, I'm doing that, I'm doing this, what all I've said, but my manual works are still, let's say, 20 hours, which was the initial starts. That means something is not right to me. So I think quantifying those, having those metrics is very important. Whatever was the spot that you were trying to solve, whether redundancy of the work or the reputation of it, it has to be translated into a number. And then when you adapted these technologies or methodologies and then trying to put it into the process, if it is not giving you drastic of the result, that means something is not right. So I think that monitoring is very important, because otherwise you might be very adventurous and keep on going on experimenting. You're burning certain dollars of company's time and energy and everybody, and you are actually getting nothing out of it. So I think that should be the fence within which you should be playing around when you are embarking your journey in these of the areas.
I think absolutely, yeah. Well put. Definitely great advice. Thank you so much for sharing that, Manish. So what sort of stands out for me is that we should just keep on digging deeper, look at the foundational layers, right? When it comes to AI transforming the test automation strategies at the end of the day. Okay. Thanks once again for these insights. And we also come to the end of today's podcast or show. Manish, I would like to thank you for being a part of our XP series, where we bring latest trends, innovations, and technologies and conversations around it, right? Thank you so much for sharing your journey. Thanks for sharing so much insights about what all work Avo is doing, the fantastic work that Avo is doing. And as usual, as I said earlier, very excited for our joint partnership between Lambda Test and Avo Automation. And those of you who are listening, please subscribe to Lambda Test YouTube channel for more XP episodes. Thanks, Manish, once again. It's been a pleasure hosting you.
Thank you. Thank you, Kavya. Thank you for inviting me. It was absolute honor to talking to you and sharing. This conversation was also quite exciting. Thank you so much.
Yeah, absolutely. Have a great day, everyone. Thanks once again, Manish.
Thank you.